Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Goosebumps, cashing a slip makes you grin, and above all, you love making your bookie cry? Then you're in the right place. The number one spot for premier betting advice and wild opinions, shared with a fan base like no other. Welcome home. This is the Punch List MMA Podcast.
What is going on, ladies and gentlemen? As always, it's your boy Dale Lippin in here. I got guests galore tonight. There's no way around it. Kicking things off, as always, you guys know him well, the host of the Give Me the Points podcast, my actual blood brother in crime, and the former co-host of the now-defunct Fistful of Cash podcast, none other than Soup himself. Soup, what's going on, buddy?
Nothing much, man. I'm excited to be on here. This is now 2 weeks in a row, 3 out of the last 4. So it's good to be back. It's good to be back cutting it up with you. And I'm excited for what we have in store tonight. I'm excited to see what our guest brings to the table and some insight that he has with us.
Yeah, for sure. So let's get after it. So I've got, we kind of really made some things happen here. You guys asked for more guests, and we're going to do exactly that. I've got Rob Pozzola sitting in here tonight. And if you guys are not familiar with Rob, as far as screen times go, outside of Anik, he's probably the most distinguished guest that we have on. He's got the little blue check on Twitter. He's been on a million different shows, a regular on Canadian TV. We won't hold that against him. He's a good guy all the same. Founder of BetStamp, founder of the Hammer Betting Network. The guy's got his fingers in about 150 different pies, and he took time out of his busy schedule to sit down and chop it up with us, go over betting strategies, things to look for, all kinds of stuff. And we're going to go over the business side of things. None other. I'll shut up so he can talk. Rob Pozzola. Thanks, Rob, for coming on, man.
Yeah, guys. Thanks for having me. I'm actually really excited to do this.
Yeah, it's anytime that we get a chance to sit down and just kind of talk and chop it up with people is always a good time. But then we are, you know, we got an off week from the UFC, and you're an old school MMA fan. And those of you who are unaware, Anik and his brother have a show on your network, and not to mention, you know, we're into the NFL, which I know a lot of the people that listen to our show aren't big NFL people, but degenerate gamblers, it doesn't matter. And that's where we fall. So we just want to go ahead and get after it. I don't want to bury the lead too much. Rob, if you wouldn't mind, can you just kind of tell us how you got involved in this space and what you're working on currently?
Yeah, so I actually have a media background. Straight out of college, I was a radio producer up in Canada, eventually became an on-air host. That's how I developed my following and that blue check mark that you speak of on Twitter. At that time, I was betting on sports, and I was doing it very poorly for a very long time. Started in high school, through college, through my early work experience, just constantly losing money. And eventually I just reached a point where I'm like, why am I doing this to myself? I used to actually enjoy betting. Now I don't enjoy doing it anymore. I want to buy a house, can't put a mortgage payment down, and so on and so forth. So I stopped betting for a while. And I've always been a numbers driven guy. So I kind of turned it into a hobby more than actually betting. And I just started to develop different models for different sports and started to test things out. And it actually took me several years before realizing that I actually had anything of value. At that time, I was betting on a lot of baseball, which I don't do now, but I would post my numbers or my win probabilities to my Twitter account every day and developed even more of a following because people started to bet them. And then eventually I started to get other professional bettors reaching out to me saying, hey, why are you posting this publicly? Like, this is really good. People are betting it. Why don't you come work with us? And at that time, I was put on what was called a free roll deal, where I had no risk on my end. I would provide plays to a sharper betting group. If they lost, I didn't lose anything. If they won, I got a percentage of the bet, which was a great deal for me at the time. So I did that for a few years, eventually built my bankroll to be pretty high and where I can go out and do this on my own. So now I work with a partner who lives in the US, and we tackle different sports, predominantly football and hockey, but a little bit of everything. And I've been able to turn that into a career. Eventually, the sports betting does get stale for me. I'll be honest, you know, a lot of people, it would be a dream for them to bet on sports for a living. For me, it's a grind. I don't really enjoy it all that much. The money is good, but that has led me to venture out into these side projects, one being BetStamp, which is a product that I firmly believe in, and one being The Hammer, which is a content network where I can go back to what I was very passionate about in my youth, which was producing good content.
That's awesome. So when you say creating models, I mean, we're talking like, I mean, just prediction models then, or are you just sitting there just inputting, I mean, you just go pouring over stat sheets and inputting data and then, you know, rerunning the models over and over again? What does that look like?
Right. So when I was in college, I was actually studying statistics. I ended up in media just by pure luck, because I was interning at a radio station and they eventually just were short staffed and decided to hire me full time. So I never graduated college because I started in the media space full time, but I have a statistics background. So it just became natural for me to ask myself, how can I apply math to sports, right? Mm-hmm. This is what I've done in other fields. I've built out all sorts of models to predict all sorts of other things. Why can't I do this for sports? So that starts with collecting as much data as possible and then figuring out how you're going to apply it to that sport. And without getting overly technical, you know, at that time I was building out what are called linear regression models. I don't do that anymore. I've kind of evolved my craft, but that's where it all started for me. And frankly, if we do go back to that time, which was about 8 years ago now, it was a lot easier to beat sports now than it is nowadays. Now I've really had to evolve my craft. A lot of what I do is very much news driven. So having to be available almost 24/7, because if a piece of news comes down in the NFL, you pretty much got 20 seconds to bet it before the entire market is going to move. So it's a lot more competitive nowadays with the amount of attention that's been drawn to the betting space.
I got you. So with that being said, I mean, I don't want to deep dive right into conspiracies right off the rip, but I mean, do you think that the NFL is, you know, exactly that? I mean, you think it's like a free market, or do you think there is some predetermination in some of the games? Because there is quite a large contingency of people that think that the NFL has got a little bit of, you know, a predictability problem as far as storylines go. Do you see that as far as when you look at the numbers?
I personally do not believe that there's any fixing going on in any of the team sports, especially the NFL. So at the NFL level, it would be so incredibly difficult to fix a game unless you were able to get to the quarterback of one of the teams, because most of the other positions don't really have that much of an impact on a game. Even if you were to pay like a linebacker or something and say, hey, man, miss some tackles, it's not going to have that much of an impact on the game. And these quarterbacks are making so much money that it would be absolutely insane. There would be no amount of money that someone would be able to get down to be able to offset paying that quarterback. So I don't really think it happens in team sports. And also there's so much sophistication in the betting markets nowadays with who's betting what, where they're betting it. With all the regulation that's happening across the US, it's becoming very much like the UK in that it's very easy to track where the money is coming from. If anything weird was going on, there would just be red flags all over the place nowadays. So I don't believe it's happening. I mean, at individual sports, there could be an argument. I still don't believe it's happening in individual sports, but it would obviously be a lot easier to orchestrate something to that effect if it's a tennis match, an MMA fight, so on and so forth.
Gotcha. So question in the chat, what about refs?
Yep.
I mean, there's some calls in particular. I think we're all, you know, when you think about that, there's some stuff that pops up, you know, in your head that goes, oh man, that almost seems deliberately missed. I can think of a should have been pass interference call from a couple years ago.
Of course. I mean, I watch tons of sports. I'm always on the refs. The reality is I actually used to ref sports. Now, this is not like major leagues or anything. It's a tough job in real time when you're on the field to be able to call things in real time. So refereeing is inherently difficult. We have the luxury of watching all these replays and saying, oh, this should have been called. This shouldn't have been called. They don't have that luxury on the field. With that said, you know, it's just like, it kind of balances out over time, right? Like a lot of people always like, oh, I lost this bet because of the refs. There's probably another bet that you won because of the refs at some point or another. And you just completely forgot about that. The big one for me is like, you got, obviously this is a fight show here, but a lot of people get on the UFC judging, right? Have you ever sat cage side at a UFC event? I have before. It's very different than when you're watching on TV, right? You will, if you score a fight right next to the cage without the luxury of watching every replay angle and so on and so forth, you're going to get wildly different results. So you see this in all sports all the time. The reality is this is very difficult, and there's so many things that factor into it, but I don't think there's any, you know, since the Tim Donaghy scandal, I think there's been a huge fixation on making sure that this doesn't happen in other pro sports.
Gotcha. So Soup, we're 2 weeks into the NFL now. Yeah. What's something that, you know, I know, I mean, outside of myself, I don't know a lot of people that place more bets than you. So we're 2 weeks in the NFL. What's your takeaway 2 weeks in of how this season's shaping up to be? What are some trends that you see already starting this year that maybe perhaps people need to take, you know, consideration of moving into week three?
I think it's a little too early to tell on trends. I know week one, obviously the public loves to bet favorites in the over. That's the favorite bet for public. But from what I could tell, unders were a good bet week one. And this week, dogs again, week two. Rob's got the Dallas little picture there. Cincinnati was, I believe, the most bet team this week as far as money line and spread goes. And wouldn't you know, Cooper Rush comes out and the Dallas defensive line, that people don't look at the battle in the trenches. People say, oh, Joe Burrow and Jamar Chase and T. Higgins against Cooper Rush. But the battle in the trenches matter. As of right now, man, underdogs are covering, and that seems to be the right bet. I don't know if you've ever followed SVP, Scott Van Pelt.
Yeah. Come on, man. I got a Terps thing right here. What are you talking about? That's my dude. What are you talking about? That's from awesome football, pants.
Scott Van Pelt, I don't think, has ever bet a favorite to cover. Yeah. Scott Van Pelt's a firm believer in taking underdogs, and underdogs is proving true right now through the first 2 weeks of the NFL season. Obviously, you know, you have your variables and that could change. You know, we might have a week where 13 out of the 16 favorites cover, but as of right now, underdogs is the bet. And you're getting huge lines. I mean, you got Houston at plus 10 last week, and that was an easy cover against Denver, an offense that can't get anything going. Nathaniel Hackett seems to be in over his head as far as play calling goes. He's struggling tremendously. But yeah, I don't know. I'd give it a couple weeks before we can say that there's a trend, but as of right now, looking ahead, there's some underdogs this week that I even like that I think are getting way too many points.
How do you feel about that, Rob?
Yeah, I think he hit on a lot of good points there. We've seen this kind of over the last couple of years now where home field advantage is diminishing in the NFL, mm-hmm. and people kind of been slow to realize it. So you get a lot of underdogs that are covering nowadays. Scoring's been way down so far this year. I don't have a good reasoning for it, and I've kind of been looking into it because typically in the past, whenever scoring would go down, it was usually a product of referees being urged to call something a little bit harder. Offensive holding a few years ago, for example. But I think what teams are doing now, especially a lot of these defenses, is just trying to take away the big play. Basically, everybody's playing like the way that defenses played against the Kansas City Chiefs last year. Give them everything underneath. Make them work their way up and down the field, but let's not give up a big play. And because of that, you're seeing longer drives, more methodical drives, less big plays. I don't know if that's going to continue going forward. Soup's right. I mean, it's 2 weeks in the season. We have a sample size of 32 games. It's not going to really tell us anything. There's just so much randomness in a 32-game sample. But I definitely think that home field advantage diminishing year after year after year. It used to be like home dogs were a thing that a lot of people like, but now even road dogs, because like I said, that home field advantage is smaller. And it'll be interesting to keep an eye on these totals going forwards because the market is not adjusting a whole lot this week. It's not like we've seen all these totals come down to lower levels this week. They're still in the same range. So people are, I guess, thinking that this is just going to balance out over time.
So that being said, I mean, so you've identified, both of you identified a few things. Is there anything that you had your eye on going into the season that you were maybe looking to exploit, you know, whether it be a futures bet or player props that you had your eyes on, anything like that, that, you know, you think might, there might still be, I guess, a viable market for? I mean, I saw a thing today where Tua jumped over like 8 different people in potential MVP odds. I think he went to like 18-1 or something like that, surpassed Brady and a few other folks even. So is there something that you saw preseason that now looks like a great bet, or something that you had identified prior to that you want to see continue? Anything like that?
Yeah. So for me, this is it's a very week to week league, right?
Right.
And the vast majority of people who bet on the NFL, they just remember what they saw last week. That's the reality of the situation, right? Kirk Cousins stunk in prime time again. Everyone's going to like the Lions against Minnesota this week. Like, it's a very week-to-week league. So for me, when I'm attacking the NFL and I'm looking at it, especially in the futures market on a weekly basis, I'm usually going to be looking at teams that didn't perform well last week because they tend to have value the following week. Because again, people just in their heads subjectively cannot think about what happened 2 or 3 weeks ago. It's always, what have you done for me lately? So that's sort of my motto when I'm approaching in-season futures, whether that's the MVP market or, you know, teams to make the playoffs, whatever. Typically it's almost like it's cheesy to say, but it's exactly like you would treat the stock market, right? Buy low, sell high, same principles apply in sports betting.
Gotcha. So utilizing those principles, and I'm glad you brought that up, what are some set rules that you have when you look at either a market or a slate of games or something like that? Like, I have, at least as far as betting fights go, I have like a distinct, you know, no-go zone as far as certain things go. So superstitions aside, is there something that you look at given a particular slate of games where you're trying to find spots to exploit for money?
So personally, I'm not a trends-based bettor. So a lot of people will use historical trends to predict what's going to happen in the future. And I don't really think that that's all that predictive, because a lot of the trends that are used, especially in the NFL, again, the NFL is very different because we deal with tons of small samples. This is not the NBA where they're playing every night and you got tons of samples to deal with. So people will often say things like, oh, I want to bet this team as an underdog because they're 15-2 against the spread in their last 17 as an underdog. And some of these games date back to 1997. Like that, you know, it's not useful in predicting what's happening now. So people get very fixated on these things, and you can basically make up any trend that would support your argument in the NFL, whether, you know, it's a large sample, small sample, whatever. So I don't really get fixated on that. Because of that, I don't create my own rules for the NFL, because the league is constantly evolving as well, right? Like, if you're like, oh, I only want to bet, you know, I'm never going to bet a road favorite. Well, there's going to get to a point where everybody is going to see value in the home underdogs, and then there's going to be value in the road favorite. Mm-hmm, so once you start applying these, you kind of pigeonhole yourself in a sense where you don't see the full picture. So for me, everything is reactionary. And it's more so like, I'm a big advocate, especially in betting the NFL, to not create these set rules for yourself, because it oftentimes just leaves you looking and it gives you like that tunnel vision where you're unable to see the other side of the argument, essentially.
Soup, is there anything in particular that you know, any hard set that you follow?
No, not really. I do agree with the whole trend sentiment that he said. Like, I know I bet a lot of college basketball and during the college basketball season, I love seeing guys, you know, post out, and it'll be Grand Canyon versus Arizona. And they'll be like, oh, Arizona's 37-1 against the spread against teams under 500 on Tuesdays in games before 3 o'clock. Right. And I'm like, okay, that's completely irrelevant. That has nothing to do with anything here. I laugh at those when I see them. As far as the NFL goes, I think I'd have to agree with Rob. I don't have a set of rules that I follow. Like, I don't have like a no bet team. I don't have a team that I'm like, I'm never betting on them again. There's certain teams that really frustrate me, aka Atlanta. They've just year in and year out. They've burnt me on either side, no matter what I bet on them. But if I see value in them or I see value against them, I'm still going to make that play because, like you said, once you set that precedent and once you say I'm not betting this team, you're eliminating an avenue for potentially making money or winning a bet. So you have to follow the value. And like the Falcons this week, I had the Rams in a 5.5 point teaser. I had them -5.5, and they took that safety at the end, and it was just like it hurt the inside. But I was like, you know what? It is what it is. The Rams shouldn't have blown a 28-3 lead.
Yeah.
Blocked like, punt, like everything that could possibly go against you at the end of that game there. But yeah, I mean, it's a great point you make, Soup. Like for me, a lot of people say, you'll hear this a lot, bet numbers, not teams. And there is something to being able to bet either side of a game. Like going, you know, a lot of people will tell themselves, they'll watch a football game and they'll say, that was a great trend, by the way, on the screen. But those are the ones I'm talking about, right? Specifically right. That people use to back their argument that don't make sense. But in the NFL, you know, people will be watching a game and they'll say, I can't wait to bet against this team next week, right? But they're not accounting for what this point spread is going to be in the next week.
Right.
Because there's so many people that are watching that same game and they also can't wait to bet against that team next week. But the number of the game actually matters, right? So for me, one of the most important things I preach when betting the NFL is try to set the point spread of the game yourself before you actually look at what the book is offering you. Because a lot of times you'll say, I can't wait to bet on this team. I can't wait to bet against them. Then you'll set a number and you'll be like, oh, I actually have value on them next week. Like I was looking to fade them, but the market has moved too far. So I think it's not only NFL, it's really every sport, right? People lose the value, it's the concept of value, and they get fixated on, I think this is going to happen. And they, in their heads, they make it a 100% probability that it's going to happen rather than there's a wide range of outcomes. And it's hard to get into that mindset, but that was really what changed things for me as a bettor. The understanding the concept of value and making my own numbers before I would actually go out and bet. Because once you already have the team in mind, the fighter in mind that you want to bet, the concept of value then goes out the window. So that I think that's just one of the biggest pieces of advice I can preach to people.
As to bring this back to fighting real quick, I will say that is something I'm guilty of in my own thinking. Is I will watch a guy fight or watch a lady fight, and I will say to myself sometimes, I cannot wait to fade them the next time they're out, because I either something I saw in the performance that, you know, maybe did or didn't go well for them. I think given the right matchup, will this person be able to exploit, you know, this coming forward? And then it doesn't matter who it is that they get matched up again. I start running that scenario in my head. Is this person's wrestling good enough to exploit that weakness that I saw? Is this person striking good enough? And, you know, I'm anybody that's listened to me talk for a period of time, hell, Soup, we did it last week. You said you just talked yourself into that bet. Like I'll literally sit there and I'll spin myself into it. And one of the things I've been trying to do better at this year is putting myself in a position where I'm playing what's the most likely outcome as opposed to what could happen, right? Like this person could come out here and do this thing that they're capable of, but is it the most likely thing to happen? And when I'm following the trends of most likely to happen, I'm increasingly more accurate as opposed to going after, you know, the anomalous event. So, that said, because you've been, you know, gathering data for so long, and that's primarily what we're using to create these things, is there a team, is there a sport that you continually run into the code breakers, right? Like the Matrix violators, the people like the Atlanta Falcons, it doesn't matter how good they are, they continue to screw shit up. Like, have you, historically speaking, come across those teams or players?
For sure. I mean, I can talk specifically about MMA here because I did bet MMA for a long time and I did it successfully. Now, one of the inherent challenges with MMA is you have such a small data sample on every fighter. you have sometimes fighters who fight once every year, once every 2 years. So it's very difficult to just put all this data into some sort of model and run it. What I used to do was what was called clustering. So I would put fighters into buckets, right? This guy's a pure wrestler. This guy's a pure wrestler, but he can also strike. This guy's a pure, you know, and I had about a dozen buckets. And then I would compare one bucket to another historically and say, okay, whenever a wrestler is fighting this type of fighter, you know, the probability of them winning is this. And I can apply that to some sort of model. The problem is eventually the market catches up to that as well. Other people start to do that. And for me, I think MMA is a unique sport in which it's very hard to do quantitative analysis of it because of the data. Whereas if I were to watch the fight, if I were to watch every single card, I think I would have a better chance of predicting MMA fights than by just looking at data and running a model. A sport like baseball is the complete opposite.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm just watching baseball games and betting them, I have no hope of winning in the long run. Nope. Like I'm not going to see anything that comes to me or whatever, right? Whereas if you're using all the data that's available in baseball, you have a much better chance to build something that's going to win in the long run. So I think it's very sport dependent overall, but every sport provides some sort of challenge, right? How much do I incorporate into a model? What can I leave behind? How much does weather matter? How much does, you know, rest and travel matter? And for all these sports, it's a very different problem to solve. So it's not specific to any, you know, given team. With that said, if I had never bet against Tom Brady in my life and the New England Patriots, I would be retired on a private island somewhere. I don't know how that team consistently outperformed their metrics for so many years. I don't know if it was Brady or if it was Belichick or just the combo, but statistically speaking, the Patriots to me were always overvalued in market. And they would always win. And it was just like, it got to the point where it's like, why am I betting on anyone but Tom Brady going into the season? Like, why would I take out a Super Bowl future on anyone else when I could just bet the Patriots or the Bucks now at like 8-1? And that's, you know, and I can never explain that one. I've never gotten to the bottom of it, but I bet against the Patriots for a long time with a very, very poor record in a long period.
Soup, I know that you've got very similar, you know, similar story, similar trappings. You know, anything in particular you want to add to that?
No, I don't understand how somebody could bet against Tom Brady. I really don't. But I'm a Tom Brady lover. I have been since probably the age of 11 or 12 years old when I first really started watching football and actually understanding the game of football. Didn't have somebody to push me in the right direction as far as favorite team. So as a young, influenceable boy, I went with the team that everybody in Pittsburgh hated and the best team in the league. And as ever since then, I've been a New England fan, still am, even though I don't know, Belichick, I think, is losing his mind a little bit. And I don't know what Mac Jones, if he's really the future or not. But I don't know. There's certain teams that I'll catch myself and I'll be like, you know, like for one, the Steelers. I live in the Pittsburgh area.
Right.
So I get a lot of the media influence from Pittsburgh area. I get a lot of the fan influence from the Pittsburgh area. I look at the team from an outsider's standpoint and I say, this is not a good team. It's not consistent quarterback play. The offensive line's absolutely miserable and the defense is not trustworthy. They're very boom or bust defense. They're kind of like the Dallas defense of last year, where they are very, you know, they, I'm trying to think of the right word I want here.
Reliant on turnovers.
What's that?
They're reliant on turnovers. Right.
They're an opportunistic defense. Yes. You know, they get the turnovers and they rely off those turnovers. It's Cincinnati week one, five turnovers and they won the game 23-20. If they have two turnovers, they're losing that game by 21. Like they rely on turnovers. They're not going to, you know, they're not going to stop you in between the 20s. So I look at the Steelers and I say, you know, I don't like the Steelers, but then there's a part of me and it's Mike Tomlin has never finished under 500 in his career as a Steelers head coach. And I'm like, somehow this guy finds a way to get it done. Somehow, no matter what, when you threw Mason Rudolph followed by Duck Hodges out on the field, somehow against the Chargers,
yep,
Duck Hodges was able to get it done. Like Mike Tomlin, that's one of those teams where I'm just like, I can't figure them out, especially in the modern era with Mike Tomlin. Yep. And that's my sports betting timeline. I mean, I haven't been betting sports prior to Mike Tomlin. But like this year, I was very adamant on Najee Harris under 1,600 yards. That's just such a ridiculous number to put on a running back that has a high school offensive line right now. He's not going to see 380 touches like he did last year. That's absolutely, it's unbelievable that he saw 380 as a rookie, to think that he's going to see 380 in back-to-back years. But everybody sees, oh, they've got Mitchell Trubisky, you know, and Kenny Pickett. They're going to check the ball down. They're going to feed Najee Harris. But if he can't get past the line of scrimmage, he's not going to be able to get yards.
Yep.
So that was a preseason future that I really liked, was Najee under 1,600 yards right now. And I think through two games, he's sitting at like 133 yards total. So,
and injured, walking injured. Like, you know, he's got something wrong with his leg.
Right. He's got the running back killer sitting there waiting to be activated. He's got a Lisfranc injury. Mm-hmm. And yes, Travis Etienne came back from it, but we haven't really seen what Travis Etienne can do. All the reports are that he's still explosive, and I get that. But it's sprained right now. If he truly injures his ankle, it's over for Najee Harris. And it's statistically proven that running backs don't come back from that. It's like a torn Achilles. Mm-hmm. You're not coming back from that. You're not going to have the same explosiveness. You're not going to be able to stop and cut on a dime. Probably the only player that I've ever seen come back from a torn Achilles in the NFL and still be productive, which is incredible, was Vince Wilfork. Mm-hmm. At all 400 pounds of a human being he was, the fact that he came back from a torn Achilles and was still productive. Outside of that, I really can't think of one.
I want to go back to something you had said. Both of you had mentioned it, and I want to kind of shift it off of football for a split second here on that. As far as MMA goes, we have the one X factor here that doesn't exist in team sports that continually rears its ugly head when it comes to the betting market. And that is the judging. It's really the only sport out there that is existing in like a major betting market where the outcome of the contest is determined, or can be determined rather, by somebody that isn't competing. Like in a very legitimate sense, you could say like a referee blew a call that led to an outcome, but we have actual individuals not competing that are determining the winner and loser of something. And we've got these, you know, I would argue that the judging, even under unified rule sets, is not getting better. It might in fact be getting worse. We have expressed, you know, some displeasure, and then Soup and I have talked, and then just the general fan sentiment is it's very hard to bet on any fight now where the probability of a decision is likely, because you cannot trust judges right now. When you were betting MMA, or just, I guess, basic insight on this, is that something you should consider, you know, because we don't get judge assignments. So I can't see when Chris Lee or Adelaide Bird is going to judge a fight to know to avoid them. But I mean, I guess historically speaking, you know, are you just better off playing finishers than anything else?
I would say no. And here's the reason why. I grew up playing poker. I was, you know, in my teenage years, and when Chris Moneymaker won the World Series of Poker, I tried poker professionally for a year. And I brought this up, you know, a little bit earlier, about 20 minutes ago, but I played poker literally 12 hours a day for a year. I can tell you every horrible hand that I lost, every bad beat. I cannot tell you the biggest pot I've ever won in my life. I can't remember when I got quads against a full house or something like that. Same applies to fighting. And there's no worse feeling, like the taste in your mouth when you think you got robbed on a judging decision sucks. It's horrible.
Like Max Holloway, Alexander Volkanovsky too.
Yeah. I can remember the times I lay awake in bed, just like, how did this happen? Like how I won this bet, I got robbed. But the reality is that over time, theoretically, this will balance out.
Yep.
There's going to be just as many decisions that go in your favor as go against you, unless you're the most cursed person on planet Earth. But people just don't remember. They don't like to talk about when they when they won a bet that they shouldn't have won. They just want to be fixated on the ones where they got unlucky or they got robbed. So at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what the sport is, right? Sometimes officiating works in your favor. Sometimes it works against you. That's what we deal with when we're betting. Now in MMA, there might be a little bit more variance in that because so many of the fights are judged, like you go to a scorecard, judge's scorecards, and there is like a little bit more variance there. So you might feel the swings a lot more than in another team sport. But overall, that shouldn't change how you bet the sport, right? If in the grand scheme of things, it's going to work out to be 50-50 in terms of how many are going to work in your favor, in terms of judges' decisions, how many are going to work against you, then that shouldn't make you look elsewhere. That's not to say you can't look elsewhere. Obviously, you can find value in betting individual round props, live betting, whatever. But I wouldn't say that that's a reason for you to just say, no, I'm done with betting the UFC. I'm not going to bet on any fights, you know, before it happens anymore, or I'm only going to look for TKO props or submission props or whatever, because the possibility that it's going to go to a judge's scorecard.
Gotcha. So let's shift things up a little bit. I want to give you ample opportunity to talk about it. If you wouldn't mind, if you wouldn't just share with people like what BetStamp is, the genesis behind it, the aim moving forward, and what you guys got cooking over there, because I think it's a fantastic setup. As a person that has developed and released an app before, I'm very impressed with what you guys got going on here. So sort of walk us through that if you wouldn't mind.
At its core, BetStamp is an odds aggregator tool. So essentially, I would preach this to anyone who's listening out there. This is extremely important to me as well. I bet at as many sports books as humanly possible. I say that in all seriousness. Now, I don't, you know, a lot of people can't go and open up a sports book account at 25 different books, but by betting at one book, you're doing yourself a huge disservice in the long run. So like even using Bellator this week as an example, right? Ben Henderson and Peter, you got to pronounce the last name for me.
I've heard Quayle, but Quayle. It's, I mean, it looks like Quayle, but I mean, he's Irish. So you gotta put it on it, you know? So it's probably Quayle. So
if I'm betting Quayle at Bet Rivers right now, I'm getting plus 155. If I'm betting him at FanDuel, I'm getting plus 182. That's a substantial difference for a $100 better. Instead of winning $155, I can win 182 on a bet. And all I got to do is spend 2 seconds finding the best price. And that's essentially what BetStamp is going to do for you. So you would input your sports books, whether that's the ones you already bet at or all the ones in your state, will automatically pull those for you. Whenever you would go to place a bet, you'd quickly open up BetStamp first. You'd go to the sports book that has the best available price. And like even on the other side of things, right? Ben Henderson is, FanDuel is minus 230 on Ben Henderson. DraftKings is minus 195. That's huge savings. If you bet Henderson at minus 195 and you lose, it's going to suck. But if you bet him at FanDuel and you're $100 better, you just lost $35 more for no reason other than not line shopping the odds. So I think we're all price sensitive in our day-to-day lives, right? Lots of people go to the grocery store. They'll buy stuff that's on sale. They're going to fill up at the gas station that has the cheapest gas. You're going to do internet shopping and you're going to shop the price. But for sports betting, this concept is lost on people. I think part of it is just sheer laziness. And I think part of it is just a lack of education that people don't know any better. They open up one sportsbook account. They just keep betting there until they run out of money. Line shopping is the single big, like easiest way to gain an edge in sports. And what you'll actually see even during live UFC fights is what are called arbitrage opportunities, guaranteed money, where you can bet one side, you can bet both sides of the fight and win money no matter what, because there's such a big difference between these sports books and what they offer. So at its core, that's what BetStamp is. It saves you time, saves you money. It's kind of the Expedia of sports betting is what I would say. No one just goes to, you know, the Mexican resort that they want to book and find it on Google. They're going to go to Expedia. They're going to shop all the resorts and all the prices, and then they're going to pick where they're going to go stay. And that's exactly what BetStamp does for sports. So it's extremely useful. I only get involved in products that I'm passionate about and that I use on a daily basis. And I'm a pro sports bettor. I use it on a daily basis, but all my friends are very casual bettors, recreational bettors. they still use it. And it's just a great way to save money in the long run.
I love it. I love it. So, okay, we talked about this briefly last episode, and I want to, you've used the term, so I'm just going to use your term. So, I'm professional sports better. In your estimation, what quantifies or qualifies in that regard? Like, this is what I'm doing as a profession, your win percentage, all the above. I mean, what is, like, you know, because there's quite a few people out there that claim to be, you know, king shit of whatever, Turd Mountain, and it's just not the case. So where did that transition come from, and how do you quantify that?
I would say there's no universal definition for it. What I would say is if the majority of your income comes from sports betting.
There you go. Okay. All right.
You know, fair enough. At one point, I was a semi-pro sports bettor. I worked a full-time job. I was making money. I was doing well, but not making as much as my full-time job. I think when it becomes your actual primary source of income, that's when you can call yourself a professional sports bettor.
Gotcha. I know some people get hung up on like the percentages, like I've got a 67% win percentage or whatever the case may be, but it's gotta be that income replacement. I can dig it. I can dig it for sure. Soup, we had a question hit the chat here, and I want to pose it to you. All right. And then Rob, you can jump in on that. So when betting MMA, especially over unders or betting a fighter to get a sub TKO, how much should you consider the referee? For the fight, for example, Herb Dean might rush in where Herzog might not, and it could result in a TKO or KO. Soup, what do you think about that? And then Rob, you can jump in after that.
I guess, sure, you can put some weight on that, but I wouldn't put too much weight into it. You brought up Tim Donaghy earlier. When I think of, you know, referees having an influence, I think of the whole Tim Donaghy scandal, and it's not even Tim Donaghy, but the other referees that he was with. And that's how he based a lot of the bets that he made. He knew that, you know, certain referees didn't like certain players, certain referees didn't like certain coaches, or certain referees were friends with certain coaches. Certain referees called certain things more than the other, which pushed him in an over-under direction. So I think, I don't want to say that you can put a lot of weight in it in team sports either. You could a while ago. I definitely think that that was the case. But like Rob said, if we notice it, you better believe that the books notice it as well. So all these lines are adjusted to take account for these officials and their history of, when Sean Hockley is the line judge in a football game, the unders, you know, 39-9, because he calls more offensive holding than any other referee in the entire NFL. If that information is available to us by a quick search, you better believe that, you know, the masterminds out there and the analytical programs that are setting these lines, it's available to them as well. There are certain referees in UFC that I feel are real quick to jump in there and stop something that I don't think is necessarily, you know, needs to be stopped. But over under rounds are set at a round and a half, 2.5 rounds. You got seconds to work with there. If you're really basing it off of that, I think you're putting yourself in a disadvantageous position.
Rob?
Just quick question for you guys. Do you know when the UFC referee assignments come out? Like, are they announced a day before? Is it just, do you guys know the timing on that?
With main events, they will usually several weeks prior, they'll announce for a main event. As far as prelim fights, we really don't see, I don't have a lot of access to it. I don't see a lot of people that do. That being said, there's a contingency, like a rotation that tends to hit based on like seniority and location. So a lot of these guys and girls aren't, you know, may or may not be licensed in different states, or they may not be assigned the larger fights based on the severity of it. Case in point, Chris Tognoni and Mark Smith are pretty heavy in the rotation when it comes to the Apex cards, but they don't travel well. Texas, on the other hand, Kerry Hatley is a guy that used to be in Vegas, but I don't think he's licensed in Vegas anymore. So whenever they go to Texas, Kerry Hatley shows up quite a bit. And then When they go overseas, you're looking at Big Dan. You've got Mike Beltran from time to time, Herb, Mark Goddard, and that's about it. The only time that I've really noticed any sort of discrepancy where it's been an issue has been the Lavelle brothers, Jaron and Jared Lavelle, who are Canadian. I think one of them had an issue with betting on fights that like the other brother was an official for. But again, I feel like I'm pulling that from something. I don't know it entirely, but go ahead. Sorry.
Fair enough. So what I was going to say to that is in every sport, including MMA, you're going to have referees that skew one way or the other. Mm-hmm. So in baseball, you're going to have guys with wide strike zones mm-hmm. and you're going to have guys with small strike zones. In NBA, you got refs that call more fouls. There's refs that are more lenient. In MMA, you'll have guys that are more likely to stop a fight earlier versus letting it go. The question is whether or not it's already baked into the market. So typically speaking, in the NBA, for example, referee assignments will come out at a certain point of the day. As soon as those come out, you have to bet the total quickly in the game.
Lines adjust awfully.
Everybody knows. And then after about 5 minutes, the line's already adjusted. Anyone who goes before the game time and says, oh, this guy's reffing tonight, he calls a lot of fouls. Well, that's already baked into the price of the game. Mm-hmm. Now you're betting with no edge. I would say the same thing probably applies for MMA. If you do know the refs beforehand, everybody has access to that information. As soon as that information comes out, the fight is likely going to be bet in one direction or another if that referee matters towards the outcome of the fight. If not, then the market won't react at all. So I would say yes, the fight, like the referee does probably matter if he's, you know, one of those refs that's at the extreme. The challenge when you're betting it is you gotta just bet it quickly, because as soon as that information is out in the market for a long time, the number will move, and now you're thinking you're betting some sort of edge and that you found something, but the reality is it's already been accounted for by the line movement.
Gotcha. All right, one more question from the chat, and then we'll bid you adieu. I know you got date night planned. I know what the recommended bet size is per your bankroll, but what would you recommend for the bet size of a sprinkle, asking for a friend?
Good question as well. Listen, bankroll management, obviously, you know, it's key to being a better. Your risk tolerance is going to determine what you're betting. So for example, most people will bet 1-2% of their bankroll as an average size play. Some people might not. Some people might go higher than that because they have a higher risk tolerance, and that's completely fine. Your volume is also going to determine your bet size. If I'm making 100 bets a day, I can't bet 2% of my bankroll on every one because that's 200% of my bankroll. So I'm probably going to be having smaller units. If I'm betting 2 or 3 plays a day, then I might go with something like 2 or 3%. Typically speaking, sprinkle is not a great word. It's a term for just making a very small bet. You probably want to go with like 1/10 of your average size bet. So if you're betting $100 on something and you want it to sprinkle on the money line or some sort of alternative, probably $10. That's not a standard rule of thumb, but it's typically much smaller than what your base unit is going to be.
Gotcha.
All right. So you're telling me that you don't make 500 unit Megalodon plays like certain guys in Vegas?
Honestly, that's the biggest way to go broke, right? The Martingale system is great in theory until you just keep losing. And it's not that flip a coin, right? Flip a coin 5 times in a row.
Yeah.
It's not that hard to get 5 tails or 5 heads. Not. And people continuously double their units. $1 bet lost. Okay, I'm going to go to 2 till I win. 4, 8, 16. Before you know it, now you've lost yourself almost $30. You started with $1 play on only 5 plays. Like, people get out of hand with the unit sizing, thinking that oh, it's all going to balance out. No. Like, it's very random. I'm a pro. I've had months where I got absolutely slaughtered. Like, I lose like 12 games in a row, 14 games in a row. I've had streaks like that. So it can happen to anyone, and try to stay as consistent as possible. It's hard sometimes because you might get into a hole. You might be down 6-7 units, and the thought of getting it all back in one shot just feels great, right? Like, you know what? I really like this play. I'm going to try to get it all back. Don't do that. Like, no, just try to slowly work your way out of it. I mean, that's the best piece of advice I can give, but problem gaming is a real thing. because people push the limits. Bet what, you know, what amounts of money that you're comfortable with, and do your best to not chase losses. That's the best advice I can give.
Yeah, people have the whole mentality of the I'm due factor.
Right.
You know, yeah. I've lost five in a row. I'm due to win.
No, I feel attacked. I feel attacked.
It's called, like, it's called gambler's fallacy, right? Yes. It's the same people who go to a roulette table and they like look at the nut. All each spin is independent of
it's
the one before.
Individual event.
Yes. Yeah, the ones before didn't matter, right? The fact that 3 12s came up in the last 10 spins doesn't mean anything. Well, it could be if there's something wrong with the table, but there's probably not something wrong with the table.
Right.
So, and it's the same thing in sports, right? That's I've lost 4 in a row, but I got unlucky on a couple of those. I'm seeing the board clearly. Like, you're not seeing the board clearly. You're doing the exact same thing that you always do, and things might be worth
insanity.
Exactly. It's what people convince themselves of is insane, right? Like, I'm not seeing it clearly. It's like, no, you have the exact same process that you always do. It's just sports are random. They're very, very random. And it's okay to have long losing streaks. You'll have long winning streaks too, but it just deal with the randomness and don't press. I mean, don't press when you're cold. I can especially tell you that. That's a recipe for disaster.
Sure is.
I feel attacked. All right, Rob, I appreciate you coming on, man. This was a lot of fun. You know, once get back into the MMA scene, I want you to experience some of the frustration that we experience on a weekly basis, watching guys like Herb Dean, Chris Tognoni, Chris Lee, and Adelaide Bird screw shit up for the rest of us. But no, listen, I appreciate you coming on. I appreciate your insight on everything. And you know, it was cool to sit down and talk to you, and I hope that we get to do it again soon.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me. I will get back. I was a huge MMA fan at one point. So my Twitter timeline during like the main like cards is still off the hook with MMA. So I'm still kind of in tune with what's going on. I just don't get around to watching as much as I used to, predominantly because I don't bet it as much as I used to either. But I appreciate you guys having me. This has been great, great conversation.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks again for everything. And we'll talk to you here soon.
I got one more question for you, Rob. Oh,
yeah, go ahead.
All right. Dallas getting 2.5 this weekend against the Giants.
I wish these teams were not playing each other this week so I could bet against both of them. That's honestly how the Giants like are getting really lucky. They stink.
Yeah.
I think Micah Parsons might be the best defensive player in the NFL right now. I say that unbiased, but he's
unbelievable.
But Cooper Rush, like the shine is going to wear off at some point soon. Yeah. So I don't have a bet on the game. I don't have a strong opinion. I looked at the schedule this week and I was like, the Giants to me seem to be a very overvalued team right now, and they're scraping by. But that's my opinion on that one.
If Cooper Rush gets hurt, do you think Tannehill comes back? He looked like he was in shape the other day. I saw him sit sideline.
Fitzpatrick.
Or what I say, Ryan Tannehill? Fitzpatrick. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
No, they got Will Grier, baby. West Virginia.
Will Grier.
Oh, Will Grier. That's right. They got Will Grier. Yeah, that's right. I forgot.
The Prescott injury is not as bad as it originally was thought it would be. So I don't think they'll be rushing to get somebody off the street if Rush did get hurt. But Jerry Jones is known for pulling the fire alarm every now and then, pulling the pressing the panic button, just like the meme. So you never know with the Cowboys.
Yeah, if Garoppolo, if Trey Lance didn't suffer.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Probably the most brutal injury I've seen since Dak's ankle injury.
Yeah.
I was ready for Jerry Jones to hit that panic button and bring Jimmy Garoppolo in.
I wouldn't have been surprised. Yeah.
But
they don't have the cap room to do it, but they would have found a way. I mean,
Garoppolo bet on himself and took the pay cut and took the unrestricted free agent. And boy, is it going to pay off, because every game he plays in, he gets $250,000. If they win, he gets $300,000. He's looking at like $6 million in incentives. And he's going to get paid in the offseason again, because Trey Lance will not be back to start next season. That's just that's a brutal injury. I wish nothing but the best for the kid, but Garoppolo bet on himself, and unlike Le'Veon Bell, it's going to work out.
It's true. Yep.
All right. We'll let you run, Rob. Appreciate you, man. Have a good
night,
guys. Mike. We'll see you.
Yep. Thank you.
All right, dude. What's up, man?
What's up,
man? We're just chilling, you know, having a grand old time.
I'm a double dose of NyQuil in.
Are you really? Oh, you're feeling weird, huh?
I'm struggling right now.
You're feeling weird. Oh, man. Well, let's talk about a couple things MMA related real quick before I cut you loose. All right. So I just threw a fat lipper in so you'll be ready to rock and roll for at least – you got at least 10 more minutes in you, right?
Oh, yeah.
All right. I want to go back earlier in the chat. Somebody said, can you give me a lean on Makhachev versus Oliveira?
Makhachev.
So I think it has to be the lean, right? I think it has to be. Just based on the fact that I think the submission defense game will be strong enough. I'm not sure what else. I don't think Charlie Olive is going to put him in a spot that he couldn't – that he's not going to be accustomed to handle just through brute strength and ability. So I'll go – my initial lean is Makhachev and under 3.5.
Under.
I think he gets it done. I think he gets him done.
Okay.
What I've noticed about Charlie Olives the last few times out is he's like a racehorse.
Oh, dude, he comes out fast.
He comes out real fast.
Yeah.
He's like a great 155 now. Like where he was like a before he was like a drained 45. He's like a solid as shit 155. And I just don't think he's gonna be built for 20 plus minutes. And I think if Makhachev avoids the early sting, I think he puts a pace on him that ends really that he can get him out of there. I think under 3.5 or maybe a no round 5 start might be something I'm looking at as well.
Yeah.
So, but that being said, we had a great event this last weekend. I thought it was good.
It was good.
You took a bunch of Dana White Contender Series people and roster fillers, threw them all on a card, and it delivered violence throughout.
It did.
So let's go main event. Let's talk about the main event real quick. Corey Sandhagen versus Song Yadong. You and I are both big Song Yadong fans, and both of us are very big Corey Sandhagen fans.
Right.
It's like seeing, I don't know, like it'd be like our dogs getting into a fight. You know what I mean? We love them, but they had to fight each other for whatever reason. What are some of your takeaways from that fight?
Sandhagen did what we kind of expected Sandhagen to do there, man. He kept his distance. He used his jab and he used those razor blade elbows to keep Song Yadong at bay. The one thing we didn't account for, which I don't know why we didn't, is that Song Yadong is a fucking dog. There's no quit, buddy.
Yeah.
I mean, normally you see guys with that muscle mass burn out.
Yes.
And he did not.
Yes.
He's nonstop pressure. We did take the under 4.5, not the way we expected to win it.
Win's a win.
A win's a win.
Win's a win. I don't care. Win's a win.
It was brutal. But Corey Sandhagen's got a better chin than I thought he was going to have, because Yadong caught him a couple times pretty cleanly. So I don't know. It was a great fight. I'd love to see them run it back.
What do you make of the scorecards? All judges had it 2-2 going into 5. Do you agree with that?
No.
I thought Sandhagen 3-1.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Yeah, 2-2. When you texted me that the other day, I was like, oof, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
But again, like Rob said, sitting cage side and judging is much different but that fight wasn't like a lot of in the clinch fighting, who's landing this, who's landing. I thought it was pretty blatantly clear who controlled the pace, who controlled the center of the octagon, and who landed more strikes.
I'll tell you something that stood out to me, and I had to, I'm still fleshing out the best way to word it, so you'll have to bear with me here, but it's something that's been on my mind after watching that fight. I'm more convinced now than I ever have been that Sandhagen, I don't know if he'll ever become one, but he's got everything necessary to become a champion, because he's fighting like a champion at this current level. And what I mean by that is he is just like, he came out with just the right level of violence, just the right level of creativity, but did not put himself in any way, shape, or form. Like, he made song work for every bit of offense that he has. And what we've seen lately out of the champions is that's the way that it's been. Champions that used to be, I'll just use GSP as just an example off the top of my head. GSP, before he had the belt, was one of the most offensively aggressive fighters on the roster. As soon as he got the belt, he became a counter fighter. There are not many champions in the UFC right now that are not fighting like counter fighters. Like, who do you know that has a belt that's an overtly aggressive fighter right now?
No, I agree with that. And to go with your GSP statement, you can make that argument for Izzy. Izzy was aggressive before he got the belt. And who Izzy bases his entire fighting, you know, John Jones. John Jones, wildly aggressive until he got the belt. And now he's a counter puncher in the MMA.
Right. So now you have Sandhagen. Sandhagen comes out, right? And I'm not saying that the win over Song wasn't a statement win because he looked great in doing it, but coming off back-to-back losses in, you know, number one and two contender spots, if you go out there and you sleep them or you choke them out, right? Like you just go out there, it puts you right back, right? But instead, he goes out and he fights like a champ, wins it in what I thought was a very dominant fashion. But what's he forced to do? He's now forced to call out somebody behind him in the rankings in Cheeto.
Yeah.
So, as far as his ability to make adjustments, and show the IQ, right? Like remember when fight first started, he goes out and he like presses Song like he was going to take him down.
Yeah.
And you know, that just completely messed with his head. Like right off the rip, I'm going to try. What are you trying to take him down for?
What, three or four times in the first minute and a half.
Yeah, and was pushing him up against the cage. And it was very strange. But after that, he kept Song at bay the entire time. So very, very interesting. Very interesting. Let's see here. Michael says, Islam's resume is not that impressive, in my opinion. He's beat a lot of good dudes, but really no one that's elite. Charlie Olives has literally fought almost, says Lloyd, but I'm going to go with, the second part of it here, all the top guys at 145 and 155. Yes and no.
And, I'll let you make the argument against the Oliveira comment.
Yeah.
But as far as Islam goes, like, you have to build your way up. You know what I mean? You're not going to be thrown against the elite of the elite. Everybody starts somewhere. Mm. And I know that, you know, you're not a huge Chimaev fan, but it's the same thing with Chimaev. Like he got to start somewhere. You got to build your way up. And I think this is the biggest test for Islam Makhachev for sure. But I do think that he comes out of there with the win. Super rocking an NBA sweatshirt. Can we get a Ball is Life reference? Oh my God, dude. Ball is Life. I've watched more YouTube Ball is Life than anything else in my entire life. There's a great channel. It's a great statement. And Ball is Life.
Well, so there it might be that, but it also might be the fact that I've consistently referenced my basketball background.
Ooh.
On the show with Trey, and Trey used to always give me shit and be like, oh, I forgot Ball is Life. So maybe, and I don't want to put words in Angel's mouth here, he might be asking you to confirm
Ball is Life.
That Ball was Life.
Yeah, Ball was Life, man.
Ball was Life.
The basketball ruled the world.
Yeah.
I remember being in my room with that little basketball hoop on my door, watching the Sixers play on ESPN at 10:30, reenacting every move that Allen Iverson made.
Right.
Ball was Life.
Ball was Life. Okay. All right. So I want to talk about the Oliveira thing real quick. So Oliveira, my opinion, the title shot, the interim title shot, or the title shot as a whole, came more so from the division being in a weird space. Because if you look at his win streak to get there, right, 45, 55, be damned, it's not a who's who the way you think it is, right? It feels like it might have been, but it's really not, okay? And I say that because it starts with Guida, then it goes to Christos Yagos, beats Jim Miller, fantastic win there. But David Tamer, Nick Lentz, Jared Gordon, Kevin Lee, and then Kevin Lee's gone after that. Tony Ferguson and what we now know is no longer Tony Ferguson, and then the win over Michael Chandler. So I would make the argument that, you know, the win streak that he went to get him in the position to fight for the belt was not particularly great, but more so coming off, you know, a primetime win over Kevin Lee, a win over what we thought was, you know, a retro Tony Ferguson, which we now know was not. And then he goes out there and he beats Michael Chandler. I'm still on the fence about how I feel about Michael Chandler in certain spots.
Right.
And then the Poirier thing, the matchup against Poirier was just always going to be a bad spot for Poirier.
Correct.
That was more matchup based than anything else. Going back to what Rob was talking about, when you want to look at the historicals and the data set of particular fighters, that's one of the first fights that would pop into my mind, is that Dustin Poirier getting his back taken and being in a position where he cannot shake off people, whether they're in side control, top position, or anything like that, that was always going to be a bad fight for him. The only fight that Olive's win that has won that really just kind of shook me was the Gaethje fight.
Yeah.
And I now know it to be,
it's because Gaethje didn't fight a Gaethje fight.
His fight IQ is fucking zero.
Yeah.
It's zero. The Gaethje that existed in Tony Ferguson, right? In the Tony Ferguson fight, is like whenever it's like the fat kid in you know exactly what I'm talking about. You do. Gaethje in the Tony Ferguson fight was like the fat black kid in Old School that hits the pommel horse.
Okay, all right.
That's what that was. He somehow managed to close his eyes and fight like Manny Pacquiao for 25 minutes. That's what I don't understand, because that Gaethje has never existed before and he's never existed after. So to say that he's ever going to do that again, I think is stupid. I don't think it's ever going to happen. I don't think it's ever going to happen.
Wow. Yeah. You dug for that one, but it works.
I couldn't think of it. It was in my mind. I had to get there quicker, but yeah, that's how I feel. So I know that you didn't see it live, but did you get a chance to go back and watch the Gregory Rodriguez Chitty fight?
Yeah, I went back and watched it. It was good.
Boy, that was a war, huh?
Yeah, it was good. Everything that was expected out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So let's end it on this. You're going to be on next week too, right? We're going to break down the Dern and Yawn card. Yeah. Well, your words, not mine. We're going to break down the Mackenzie Dern, Yawn Zhao Nan fight.
Is Garbrandt on that card too?
No, he dropped out today.
He was supposed to fight. Was he fighting?
He was supposed to fight Ronnie Yahya, and Ronnie Yahya dropped out.
Right. Ronnie Yahya dropped out.
Listen, Ronnie Yahya dropped out, and they were going to find him a replacement opponent. And then he notified the UFC today that he would, in turn, be unable to compete on October 1st because he is now injured.
Oh, yes. No. We're not going to ignore this. People's main event. If Charlie Olives wins, can we get Dale to bleach his hair?
Negative.
What about
Negative.
The beard?
Oh, definitely not. Yeah, you want me to go full Gordon Ryan and just go white? No. I'm actually shaving my head tomorrow. So I won't have any hair to bleach. And then, yeah, so we'll have to come up with something different as far as punishment goes in that regard. Who has Islam beat to earn a title shot? Nobody. I will not argue that Islam has beat anybody to earn a title shot. What Islam has done to earn a title shot is the UFC push. Is what he's gotten there. You have to understand, and I'm sure you do, so I'm not saying it like you don't know. Sorry. There's a vacuum right now where the UFC has little to no superstars. But yet they have markets that are starving for superstars, i.e. the English market and the Eastern Bloc, Russian, Asian market. That they need a superstar. They need a Khabib. They just need it. There's got to be an antagonist and a protagonist. And right now there's just none. There's none. And it doesn't help that two of the champions in the most exciting divisions, 185 and 145, are Aussie fighters, because while that's a decent market, the state of California has more people and is bigger and than Australia as a whole. And as much as I love the Aussies, and you guys know I love all of you, all my Oceania people, I love you all very much. You're not a very big market as far as having champions, you know, the championship push for money making and spending goes. And your guys aren't that polarizing. Like Volkanovski is the most milquetoast champion out there. I know he's number one on the pound for pound list right now, and he's very exciting to watch. But dude, if you told me Dana White Contender Series is on, or Alexander Volkanovski is going to sit down for an exclusive one-on-one with Brett Okamoto, what are you watching? You're going to watch Dana White Contender Series. You're going to be like, literally, I think I'd watch Monster Truck Racing before I watched Alexander Volkanovski do anything other than fight.
So here's my question as far as Islam goes. So, sure, he hasn't beat anybody to deserve a title shot, but who else are you going to give a title shot to? Are you going to run the Poirier back? You're not going to run the Gaethje back. Were you going to do Mike Chandler?
No.
Fazeev? That's the only other argument you have.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. It's a tough spot.
You're not going to give it to Dos Nachos.
No. Nacho, listen. I'm saying this right now, and I have no confirmation of this whatsoever. I just talked to him about it today. I'm going to say it right now. Drew Dober is going to fight RDA in Rio.
Yeah.
I am manifesting that. That shit is going to happen. Everybody else that is circumnavigating the top 15 right now is booked or injured. Dariush is sitting as a backup in case one of those guys get dropped out. Dariush is... I want to be respectful to people's hard work and their career and stuff like that.
Fucking boring.
Well, no, it's not that Dariush is boring, but there was a time where TJ Grant got a title shot or was scheduled to get a title shot. There was a time where Eric Koch was scheduled to get a title shot. There are some guys that go on a win streak to a point where they just can't be ignored and there's nobody else. And then they just find themselves in a weird position. And Beneil Dariush is one of those guys. Four fights ago, Beneil Dariush got slept by Alexander Hernandez. And now all of a sudden he's the number three lightweight in the world. I'm sorry. What? I don't buy the math. MMA math don't add. But that being said, as far as what I would love, and I see you guys talking about in the chat here, I would love if Charlie Olives beat Islam Makhachev. I would love to see the red curtain come down. That would make me ecstatic, but I'm just based on what I think is coming, I think you're going to see a Makhachev win, but my heart would be overjoyed if Oliveira won. I think it's a bad matchup for him.
Yeah. And Dariush right now, UFC has him at 6 in the lightweight rankings.
Oh, so he's moved out. Okay. For a while there, he was number 3.
Yeah. They have him at 6. You know, number 1 is obviously Charles Oliveira. 2's Poirier. 3's Gaethje. Islam's at 4.
Yeah.
And then 5's Michael Chandler. And then Dariush, Fazeev, Dos Nachos. Those guys round out your top 8.
You guys, everybody's just killing time until Jalen Turner comes around. Jalen Turner is amongst the future of that division.
Yeah.
Like I'm telling, if there's an app where you can buy fighters like their stocks,
mm-hmm.
you need to load up on Jalen Turner stock. That dude is a 6'2", 155 pounder with great cardio, good submissions, and knockout power. That dude is a problem for people. Jalen Turner is a real issue. Go ahead.
He made his debut late notice against Vicente, right?
Yeah.
Like he stepped in out of nowhere and looked good.
Yeah, looked good.
2 minutes. I was
until he got caught. Yeah, yeah.
This kid's going to beat Vicente Luque. You're like, then obviously ended up got caught and lost. And then who else did he lose? Steamroller.
Matt Frivola. Yeah.
And then since then, he's gone like 5 or 6 in a row.
Yeah, 5 in a row after that. Yeah. Yeah. Beast mode. I'm telling you, that kid's got a super high ceiling.
Get those losses out of the way early.
That's right. See, there, you got to learn from them, right? That's right. We don't lose. We grow. That's all we do.
Speaking of like a young fighter coming in and getting thrown to, you know, high level competition. We were talking about Islam not fighting anybody. Jalen Turner comes in and has to fight Vicente Luque. And then in his third fight has to fight Matt Frivola.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, deep end.
Not seriously.
It's like deep end.
Throw him in there. See if he can swim.
Speaking of young fighters, anybody in the chat watch Contender Series? Did the 17-year-old win tonight on Contender Series?
I did not, dude. I that's what I wanted to see.
Yeah, I don't know if he won or not. I'd be interested to see. Oliveira at a plus 145 right now. Do you think that that's okay, Boston Bruce Betts. He won or he lost? Sorry. He won by decision. Okay, cool.
Nice.
Very nice. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Bro, did you see his facial structure?
Yeah.
He literally, like, he's got the facial structure of like a 300-year-old Easter Island statue. How on earth you convince me that kid's 17 years old, dude?
That's crazy.
Plus 145 on Olives. I feel like
he's the only fight tonight that didn't end in a finish.
Oh man.
The other four fights were knockouts in three in round one, one in round three, and then his fight went to decision.
The real question is, how did Yanni do tonight? How did Yanni do tonight? Because that's where he's like the inverse Jim Cramer. Like, I don't know if you, I mean, I know you're not a big stock market guy, but Jim Cramer from Mad Money is a fucking nightmare. And
yeah. Oh no, I know who he is.
Okay. All right. I don't know if you know.
I know who that is. How did Yanni the Greek do tonight?
Yeah. What is he like? 26-2 out of his last 28. I've had some cold streaks, man, but damn.
2-26 son. That's what you mean to say.
Or 2-26. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah,
don't give him credit that he doesn't deserve.
You're right.
Yanni picked all favorites and swept.
I mean,
yeah, you got to break that cold streak somehow.
You have to, man. Just go rock chalk. Yeah, for sure. All right. Real quick. I want to, go ahead.
Michael really doesn't like Islam, dude.
No, he's fired up about it.
He's gassed up.
He's fired up, man. It's good. I like it, man. I like it. Get you some. You know what we'll do is if when Makhachev wins, Mike, I'll send you a Caucus Mountain Warrior decal, man. I'll go ahead, which is now available at the store at the link in my bio on my Instagram. I'll send you a Caucus Mountain Warrior decal, bro. You can rock that thing as in honor of Islam beating Charlie Olives. All right. Anyway, dude, is there anything that you see looking forward to next weekend that you think you should hop on now before the line moves? Anything like that you sort of think is out there as far as the Mackenzie Dern, Yan Jianan fight or anything Bellator this week? I historically speaking, am terrible at picking Bellator, but you know, I didn't know if you had anything on the. I know you like to get a little degenerate from time to time. If there was anything that you had seen out there that. You wanted to play anything?
Hang on one second. I'm looking right now.
I'll tell you a fight I have my eye on.
Is it Latifi? Is it the Latifi fight? I'm not saying Latifi, but I'm saying the Latifi fight.
No. Yeah. Okay. I mean, Alexi Olenek over Alir Latifi seems like a foregone conclusion, right?
Yes, plus 155.
We got to take Olenek, right?
Come on now.
Yeah. You got to take Alexi.
Speaking of that, FanDuel fucked his name all sorts of up. They have his name spelled Alekeyolenik.
That might be the Russian spelling.
All right. FanDuel's an American-based product.
Man, I don't know, man. I don't know. Look, I like the Olenek spot. Mm-hmm. I like Maxim Grishin over Philippe Lins.
Okay.
The other one that I love. And I want to know the odds on it here. Randy Costas, huh? Fuck out of here with Chris Daukaus, bro. I am never betting a Daukaus brother. Don't you ever, fucking Daukaus brothers, dude. Randy Costa, Guido Canetti.
Okay. You want the odds on it?
I want the odds on that because I think Guido is going to be a sizable dog, and Randy Costa got no dog in him. If Song Yadong has dog in him, or just pick any sort of breed that has any bit of fight in it. Randy Costa is like, he's a Pomeranian. No dog in him.
Yeah. You're going to like this.
Guido, can, you got to be what? Plus 375.
No, plus 240.
I'm on it.
Boy,
if you don't tell that dog,
he's never gonna.
You tell him his uncle's gonna kick the shit out of him. He don't shut up.
Randy Costa. So that was Tony Kelly was his last fight.
Yeah.
When he
no. Wait.
Yeah, Tony.
Tony. Hold. Yeah, it was. I'm sorry. Yeah, Tony Kelly beat him. You're right. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. That was the fight where he took that one single jab, and then it was just all downhill from there. He just covered up like a baby and was like, and then Tony Kelly ended up finishing him with elbows, I believe.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah. Randy Costa does not have it in him. All takes is one. Takes is one for him to give up.
Yeah. And that's even in the Yanez fight when he was using the jab and was doing well against Yanez, everything looked great. And then the moment that he couldn't get Yanez out of there, and then Yanez started booping him on his nose. Mm-hmm. The first couple boops to the nose, he was like, I'm just going to stand still real quick. And I'm just going to wait for the referee to come in here. And I just hope that this doesn't hurt too bad until he gets here. And then that was it.
Yeah.
It was over with. Yeah. It was over. Real quick, I don't think I addressed it to anybody that's watching. My normal computer's not working, so I've got to use a different microphone. I have no idea what the audio is going to be like, and we're getting a different direction in my office, so there's that. And then Mike Davis versus Slava Claus is another fight. They brought Mike Davis back onto the roster. Mike Davis is game as shit.
I'm looking right now to get your odds. As far as there's a question in the chat that said 17-year-old in the UFC now, did his parents have to sign off on that? Yes. I would assume so.
Yes, they did.
It's like, you know, ball is life. Andrew Bynum signed with the Lakers as a 17-year-old. His parents had to sign off on that. So I would assume, yeah, you're under the age of 18. Your parents have to make that decision for you.
I love it.
Who was question, it, Mike Davis?
Mike Davis and Vyacheslav Borshev. Slava Claus.
Okay. That's not who they have Mike Davis fighting on FanDuel right now, but
no, Slava's stepping in. They just changed it like a couple days ago.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, the prior odds were Mike Davis at minus 175. Yeah. Question for Soup. How come we didn't ask the guests to stand up and check for June shorts? Is that something Trey did?
No, I don't think so. I don't know if it's because Rob's Canadian, or maybe he's asking you. You don't wear jorts, do you? You're not a big jorts guy.
Dude, I'm not a jorts guy. Come on. I don't. If you've ever seen me from the waist down, jorts is not something that would work here. I've got baby making hips. 95% of my weight lies in my thighs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was, I can't jorts.
Yeah. You're like a strawberry being held by the stem, is how you're shaped.
You're right. I'm sorry. The Cowboys fan. He's a Cowboys fan. They rock the jorts and the oversized jerseys. You're right. I should have put that together. Yeah, man. You're right. I'm surprised he didn't have a Yankees hat on.
Talking shit. Guy came on here. You're fucking talking shit after the fact. Oh, man. All right. Wow. Anyway, you'll be on next week?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Yeah. We'll talk then. Well, I'll talk to you before then. All right. Real quick, we'll just do some housekeeping stuff. If you guys are recording tomorrow night?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, tomorrow night.
All right. So tomorrow night live on YouTube, the Give Me the Points podcast. How did you guys do this week? I know going into the week you were doing great.
And No. Listen, weeks run from Thursday to Monday.
Okay? I understand, but I know. Okay. Well, let's put it this way. Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
Bangers.
And then Sunday, the story was not updated as much. So let me.
No. Here's the thing. So, like, I wanted to wait until after the Monday night game because we had the chance to break even on the Sunday, Monday slate. So I didn't want to go out there and be emotional and get all fired up about some of the lot. Like Baltimore blowing their lead was brutal.
Yeah.
That really hurt. But all in all, let me pull up the exact numbers here. So all in all this week, we did go plus 11 and a half units.
Okay.
From Thursday to Monday, we did really well. Yeah. We went into Sunday up 14 and a half. We lost three units over Sunday and Monday, which it's a bet, maybe
that's
two
okay.
bets.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So it wasn't bad. We hit our big teaser, which was nice. We didn't even have to tease it. Both those teams covered the 10-point spread. But yeah, we did college, man. Tyler and I were talking, and like college is a spot where it's not, people might think it's random. I don't think college is as random as professional sports. Hmm. College, you know, the kids that can play, you know, the kids that are just there getting a full ride to get their communications degree. I think we're going to, we took advantage of college really well this weekend, and I expect us to do the same this upcoming weekend. The NFL, we'll get it figured out. I mean, we're up money on the NFL. We're not up as much as we would like to be, but we are up two units on the NFL this year through 2 weeks. Player props have been the moneymaker right now. So we'll probably, you know, we're going to stick to those. We're going to keep finding spots there. But don't worry, we'll get the games figured out. It's been crazy, man. I mean,
I feel like you're interpreting this like I'm talking shit.
No, I know you're not.
Okay. But like, you've been doing great.
We do that spread challenge. Dude, it's madness.
I'm sorry that I won. I mean, that's not really my
thing. Yeah, Dale won this week.
Yeah, that's right.
Kansas Duke over 66.5 thoughts. Kansas's offense has been fire. And their defense has been Swiss cheese. So I'll have to look into Duke a little bit. But as far as Kansas and the over goes, I'm intrigued. Absolutely.
I have an idea.
Okay.
I'm going to flesh this out real quick. So obviously we're brothers. The Boston Bruce Betts boys, I don't think they're brothers. I do believe that they're best friends though. And then we've got
something. We're not.
What are you talking about? You're the only friend I have in the world. I had another friend, but he stopped doing the show. So I don't have any friends anymore except for you. And then, on the October 4th show, I've got the Pound the Line boys coming on, and I believe they are brothers.
Mm.
I wonder how many brothers and bros like podcast duos exist. And then if that's the case, we should do a handicapping challenge.
Absolutely.
We'll flesh it out more,
yes.
But I want to put it, I'm just putting it in the ether so we can start grabbing this out, and we'll do a, we'll do like a bros betting challenge. You know what I mean? It doesn't have to be like blood bros, but just bros bet. Like we'll track it. We'll put money up, or you want to do like shame bets? We'll do like
flesh
real
for
money.
Flesh for flesh.
Okay. I like it. Okay. Yeah. All right. I'm excited. I got to figure this out. Otherwise I'm going to stutter. All right. Let's wrap this thing up. We're well over. We're about an hour and a half.
One last thing to answer Boston Bruins bets. As of right now, the sharps are hitting the under. So you have the professional bettors coming in and hitting the under 66.5 in that game. We'll see how low it goes. We'll see. Yeah, obviously with college football, you have to look at the weather. That makes a big deal for kids that are not the most talented in the world. So yeah, that's something I will look at. Love Kansas. They hit their win total for the season already. It was 2.5. They're 3-0.
Right.
Good for them, dude.
Good for them. All right. Okay. I think that's it. I don't have any more notes to go over. That's it. Appreciate everybody that tuned in tomorrow night live on YouTube, 8:30. What time do you guys do your show? 9?
8:30. We'll do 8:30.
You float your time. Yeah. All right,
yeah. We float our time. It all depends on when the kids get in bed and all that.
Okay. So the best way to know what the time is going to be is to follow you on Instagram at Gimme the Points.
Correct.
GIMME. So at Gimme the Points, follow you on there. You'll get the hard time. It's going to be sometime between 8:30 and 9 Eastern. Correct. You guys will go live. You'll break down,
week four of college, as well as week three of the NFL.
Right. So you'll break that down. And then next Tuesday you're coming on. We're going to break down Mackenzie Dern versus Yan Xiaonan. And then, yeah. Okay. That's all we got for right now. No UFC bets for me this weekend. You'll send me your plays. I'll just post them up on my page. How about that?
Sure.
So anyway, we'll go ahead and post this up everywhere. And then if you guys haven't already done so, please hit that like button. If you haven't subscribed, hit subscribe, then go over to Give Me the Points, subscribe over there, and like their videos. And yeah, if you enjoyed having Rob on the show, at Rob Pozzola, go over to his Twitter page. I think he's more active on there, and let him know you saw him here. That makes a big difference. And then maybe we'll be doing something working with him in the future. So anyway, I appreciate you guys, everybody that bought merch this week. You guys are killer. I've officially sold about 7,000 times more than I ever thought I would. So I appreciate that tenfold. And if you're not already aware, the Women's Science shirt is out. Have you seen it? Did you see the new logo?
Yeah, I like it.
You like it?
That's good.
That's the nicest thing you've ever said. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I like it. No, that's good. That was real good. I appreciate that. You really fucking pumped me up there. That was good. That's good. It's not like something I've been working hard on, but yeah, you're right. It's good. I will say this. I had to remove the gray colorway today because somebody ordered a gray shirt, like the Heather Gray with the Caucus Mountain Warrior shirt. And on the mock-up, the gold text really popped, but in print and sending, the gold text did not pop on the Heather Gray the way I wanted it to. So we had to get it out of there. So anyway, all right. Appreciate everybody that tuned into the show. Appreciate everybody that was active in the chat. Mike, I'm sorry you feel the way you feel about Islam, and to everybody else, be good to each other. We'll see you later.
Trey, I'm still thinking about you. If you need anything, you just call me. Okay. It was a tough beat this week.
Real quick. If Trey doesn't go as Homelander for fucking Halloween, I'm gonna be so upset.
What else can he be?
He can't be anything. He can't be Maui again.
No, and if he goes as Homelander, he better walk around with a bottle of breast milk and drink it.
Something tells me there's a bottle of breast milk within arm's reach of that guy at all times.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.